Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NABAZOOM. Where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NABAZOOM room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear tonight's speaker, and we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. I've known Jonathan R. more recently than when he first came in. I am so glad that he is going to share tonight. From what I've seen, he's super active. Service means everything to him and his sobriety. He's going to share that with us. And we thank you, Jonathan. It's all yours.
Thanks, Tim. It is it's a privilege to be here and to be able to speak and share my experience with you. It is my hope that there's someone out there who hears something that that brings them a little bit closer to where they need to be, just like people did for me. Again, my name is Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 27th, 2017. I found myself down here in Atlanta about a year and a half ago, and found myself in the warm embrace of Napa, and I'll get to that in a little bit, but Napa has meant so much in my journey, and I just wanted to mention that off the bat. I guess I'll start off at the beginning. I had what can by all accounts be described as what should have been a happy childhood. Pretty normal, pretty run of the mill. My parents got divorced when I was three, and they fought to have joint custody of me. I spent a week with my mom, a week with my dad, a week with my mom, a week with my dad. Kind of jump back and forth and do that thing. I found as I got older, I was incredibly shy and really did not feel like I fit in with anyone or at any place. I never felt comfortable in those places, and I didn't quite understand why. I took a long time for me to get to a place where I could dig through that. But I felt very unique and very alone in this world, which is something that I heard later when I got here, and was new that other people felt that way to me. As I kind of came up through school, I moved schools several times, and there was always this complex of being the new kid and not fitting in wherever I went. No matter what I did, it didn't seem to do much good in my mind, and that's where my problem is. I did that for a while, and eventually found a little groups where I fit in, but I could give them what they wanted. I could be the person that they wanted, or at least I thought I could. And I'd bounce between different cliques or different groups and really just desperately trying to find who I was and get their validation. That's all I really wanted. But even if I got some groups, validation, sometimes adoration, which was even better, it wasn't enough. I wanted these things, but when I got them, they never ever seemed to be enough. That was, socially, that was really with anything. There just never seemed to be enough of what I wanted. to satisfy me. As I went through high school, I thought, the best way to go was to play things straight and narrow. I did my best, and then I don't know, somewhere in my senior year, the cooler kids wanted me to hang out with them, or who I thought were the cooler kids, and I was determined that I was going to make the most of this opportunity, and I decided that I was going to teach myself how to drink, and I was going to be the best person to learn how to drink ever. I planned it all out. I had a day alone. I was going to break into my father's liquor cabinet, and I was going to experiment and train myself how to drink properly. I won't go into the whole drunkalogue, but it didn't turn out well. I did the things that we do when we're drunk, and I felt the way that most people do after they drink. I felt pretty miserable. The difference was, I wanted to do it again. I didn't think, wow, that was horrible. I don't want to slow down. Because when am I going to do this again? How am I going to do this again? How am I going to get better at this? I always had this, drive to be the best, to show you that I was the best at something. And as I went on, there never seemed to be enough of that either. There never seemed to be enough of, there just wasn't anything there when I got there. So that's kind of started my drinking career. The one thing that it did give me was people paid attention to me a lot more. Or at least in my mind they did. I was very shy, but not when I was drinking. I was alone, but I could sure find other people just like me when I was drinking. I could say the things I always wanted to say, but I couldn't when I wasn't drinking. But to me, the party just started and stopped, continued on with the drinking. I took that into college. Did okay. When I put my mind to something, I seemed to do okay. It was just keeping my mind there and moving forward. And as things started ramping up towards the end of college, I got a girlfriend. She lived in another town, and I noticed that other people were like making plans, and I wasn't so much doing that. I wanted to live a more bohemian life. I met someone who lived in or was going to school in New York, and we started dating, and I went out to visit her a few times, and within one or two visits, I was completely intoxicated with just a different life that I could recreate myself once again if I ever moved out to New York. Without much thought, that was just it. I was going to move out. I was going to leave everyone behind because they didn't really know me, and I could just start over in New York. And I moved out there not knowing anyone. I had a cousin in Queens, and I moved out to New York not really knowing anyone. And I will say that the first 2 years were incredibly lonely, and I didn't really – I knew that I was lonely, but that was not something I could admit to myself, which was became a theme in my life. Lots of things that were there that I did not want to look at, I was not going to deal with, but that was a time where I really kind of fell into drinking to forget those things. I didn't want to look at that, and I could not admit to myself or anyone else that I was failing at my move, that I was not doing what I wanted to do. There was nothing that came into my head that wasn't right. So if I had decided I was going to move out to New York and make the best of that, then that was the best thing I could do. And just doing it was good. I decide that, the only way I could get, my mother at the time to allow me or be okay with me to move out to New York was I told her I was going to be an actor. I knew that would be enough for her. not really admitting to myself, or definitely not her, how just absolutely riddled with stage fright and getting up in front of other people were. Spent a lot of money on all the things that you're supposed to do, like headshots and all this other stuff, and could never make it to an audition because I was so terrified of really everything. Anyways, so I found myself not being an out of work, not really after, and found myself in what people do. I found myself in the restaurant industry in New York. I had grown up kind of with a culinary family, and I found some real, what I thought was companionship and joy there, you know. A kitchen crew and a restaurant crew really love to celebrate and commiserate after working. And I found what I thought were my people. You know, I found people that understood me, and they understood why I had such a horrible night and why I needed to drink. You know, that's what I did a lot of times. Is I sat at the end of the bar and I just complained about everyone and everything. And then I planned with people how I was going to take over the world, how I was going to have the best restaurant, how I'd do things differently, how no one really understood, and how all these other people were holding me back. You know, that was a big thing. I couldn't understand why every time I had a female boss that I was loved and adored, but you know, all these male bosses, they were holding me back. I knew it. You know, it's always someone else outside was holding me back. I could never look inside. I could never see what was going on here that was keeping me from moving forward. But you know, kind of as things go, I kept moving up, kind of getting more jobs. So the little hints, the little glimmers that maybe I wasn't living up to the character that I thought I was weren't there. You know, maybe I didn't show up on time, or maybe I even got fired that one time. But you know, there are plenty of people to blame, and I got a new, better job. So you know, I can't be doing that much wrong. And that went on for a long time, a good while. But the fun started leaving the drink after a while. And instead of going out after work with people to have a good time, I found myself maybe having one drink there after sneaking drinks my entire shift, and then just going home and drinking the way I really wanted to drink. And not hanging out with people, and friends started falling off. And what I found was I was just alone in a very small room with myself and my drink. And that was not the best place. But I couldn't admit that to myself. In my own mind, I was really trudging through. I was thriving. I found myself, in a relationship, and, I can remember at the end of my first date, saying to her, God, I'm so glad I found someone who can drink like me. Not realizing that she didn't drink like me. I learned that early on. I really thought I had found someone that I could just drink openly with and do that. And what I found was I thought that would save me. I thought that would change me somehow. I kind of secretly prayed that it would. When it came down to it, alcohol had a much stronger pull on me than being with someone, even though that's what I thought I wanted. And it made me, I made the decision to hide that instead of face that. And so that went on for a lot. Several years, and it was a very hard thing to do. I definitely I know now, doing some work, that I used that relationship as a justification for that I couldn't be so bad. You know, maybe I maybe I was hurt in some ways, and maybe they didn't really see the full thing. But if this person is with me, if anyone is with me, then, you know, what? How could I be that bad? These are just, you know, I can put that off, or I can drink that thought away. I can drink towards oblivion. And that was a lot of my day. Jobs were getting harder to keep. I could get them. I couldn't understand why I had such a impressive resume on paper, and I couldn't understand why it was getting so long, why there were so many jobs on there. Because, you know, in my own mind, I was pretty great. I remember I got my first management job, and I thought, God, you know, finally someone's going to see how well I can do at this. And, man, it was just a miserable mess from the get-go. I'm glad that I didn't drive that business into ruin. But I drank my way through that, and eventually they had let me go because I couldn't stay sober during a shift. I'd show up already drunk before service. I'd drink through service. I was leaving the restaurant to go to the dive bar across the street to get drinks because they ended up, you know, banning booze in the restaurant for employees. But there, you know, there was never enough for me. And all these had to be hidden. All these things that were going on outside had to be hidden from the person I was with. And that lying that I had to do to myself to make myself believe that it was all okay, the lying I was doing to the person I was in a relationship, just kept eating away at my soul. And it gave me this emptiness that I didn't know what to do about. I didn't have a higher power. I didn't have a God. I wasn't raised with that. In fact, I was pretty belligerent to anyone bringing up those things in my life. You know, I had a good friend who lived around the corner from my apartment, and I helped her build a bar, and you know, I was really close with her, but she had enough, and she found the rooms. And for about 10 years, any time I saw her, and she lived, you know, 100 yards away from me, I'd walk to the other side of the street because I was not about to hear what they wanted to tell me. You know, no matter how bad my life got, I was not about to change. I had a pretty firm belief that around 24 or 25, I was fully baked. Jonathan was done, and I'd gather more knowledge, but who I was, the core of me was done. I didn't think change was a possibility for most people. So, as I'm progressing in my disease, as I'm going from an everyday drinker, which I was for a long time, to around the clock everyday drinker, I'm finding less and less things working out in life. I'm finding that the things that used to give me joy, used to give me pleasure, just aren't there. I couldn't even tell you what they were at a certain point. They just were gone. I definitely had a lot of suicidal ideation. I didn't realize at the time. I couldn't tell myself that either. You know, I'd shrug it off as best I could, and I'd drink more. And I found myself trying to sober up or just take a dry few months on a job I had gotten up in Maine for the summer. And I got up there the first weekend and proceeded to get blackout drunk behind the bar. The owner came and relieved me, sent me to my room that I was supposed to stay for the summer. And when I got up the next morning, they politely asked me to leave the island and never come back. I left that island, and I had to come back to New York. I had gotten that job through the woman I was seeing at the time, through her coworker or her boss's family. So this time there wasn't any lying there wasn't any, my bosses just really didn't like me. They wouldn't give me the shifts I wanted. There was none of that. It was going to come out that I had done what I've been doing for a long time. Not what I was asked to, not what people were paying me for, but what I wanted to do and what would keep my disease going. I got back to New York, and it was made pretty clear that was unacceptable and that relationship was over. I didn't really have a place to go. I found myself checked into a hotel downtown, and that I thought was going to be my lowest. I thought that was my bottom. I couldn't put this into words for a long time, but you know, I know now that I really truly reached that point that they talk about in the book of drinking for oblivion. You know, I wanted just all the pain, all of it, to go away. And I kept waking up. Couldn't get drunk anymore. Not the way I wanted to. I just kept drinking and drinking. And thankfully, that woman I was seeing knew someone who was in the program. And First, she reached out to me and suggested that I call him, and that was not something I was willing to do, but at least put planted a seed in my head, and I couldn't tell you how long, but a few days later probably, it gave me enough courage to call up Central Hotline, and in that, there was just another alcoholic on the other end of the phone, and he very politely let me bitch and moan, complain as much as I wanted to. And when he thought I had tired myself out enough, he said, "You know what, you sound a lot like me. And, you know, I really hate other people." And I was taken aback. I couldn't do that. I was in the hospitality industry. It was my job. People paid me to be nice to them. I just really had no idea what he was saying. And I really had no idea what was being said in these rooms for a long time. But I reached out to the person that I was putting in contact with. And he told me to meet him at a coffee house around Gramercy Park. And he did what we do. He took me out. We walked around Gramercy Park, what seemed like forever, and he just told me his story. He didn't do anything but just share where he had started out from, and that he didn't have to live like that anymore, and I didn't have to either. And that seemed like the furthest thing that was possible to me. It didn't seem anywhere near to true. And he said, "Listen, we're going to go around the corner right now, and there's a men's meeting in there. There's a big long table. And anyone who has under 90 days is going to sit at that long table, and someone's going to get up, they're going to tell you a little story about their life, and then it's going to go around, and eventually it's going to get to you, and you're going to say your name and that you're an alcoholic, and then you're going to tell a little bit about where you're at." I said, "A couple of weeks, maybe. Definitely not tonight. That's not where I'm at." He said, "No, you're going to do it. And oh, by the way, the rest of the room is going to be surrounded by men who have a lot more sobriety than that. And they're all going to look really scary to you. But what you need to know is that every single one of those men has been where you're at. Every one of them. And they have cried in that room. And they have shared themselves in that room, and they're there for you in that room." And I had gotten there. They had asked me when they invited me to this meeting that if I could just try not to drink that the rest of the day, that'd probably be the best thing for me. That's not quite what I heard. I showed up. I thought, you know, partial credit, right? You know, I did show up, you know, I should get something for that. And so I showed up, eyes yellow, like they'd been for quite a while. And I cried most of the meeting from what I remember. Head down into the table crying, and it got to me, and I think I eked out my name, and I think I eked out I'm an alcoholic. And that meeting ended, and every ounce of me just wanted to leave there and go to the nearest bar, go to the nearest bodega, get something, drown that out. I don't ever want to do that again. And probably six or seven guys just surrounded me and told me I didn't have to, and talked to me and shared with me their story. I have this, what is now very precious and beat up little pocket big book. I carry that thing around with me wherever I go. I get to share that big book with other men now. But that was given to me at that first meet. And I'm very grateful for that. So that was my first being tossed into AA and being shown just a glimpse of what goes on here, that people change their life. I really didn't understand what it was. It didn't make any sense to me. And the very next day I flew back to Michigan where I grew up, because I didn't really have a place to go. And there I was in a place that I had run away from, back living in my father's house, and thinking that, woe is me, you know, I've thrown away my whole life, my career, the woman who was there for me. There's nothing left for me. I've thrown away my life, and nothing will happen after this. I'm 36 years old, and it's over. It's just over. And thankfully, people with a lot more time let me know that there's a lot of life after 36, and there's going to be a good life if I just kept coming back. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that when I was in a meeting, there were people who seemed to be doing all right. I knew that after I kept coming back, that, you know, these people that I thought had to be lying were showing up every day. That when I kept coming back, there were people who were showing up after me and doing what was suggested to them, and doing better or having a better time at it than I was. You know, it took me a while to figure out, don't drink and go to meetings. Again, I got partial credit because I was going to meetings. I just wasn't stopping drinking in between. And in this time, I get a few weeks, I get a few months, and I'm like, you know what, I got this. I can get back to my old life in New York. Everything will be back on track because now I am sober for 100 days. Inevitably I'd get back to New York. Something very small would happen. That seemed very large to me, and I'd start drinking again, and I'd end up back in Michigan, and that I did that bounce back and forth, thinking that if I could just get a little bit of time, I could say thank you to you very nice people and get back to the life that I so desperately wanted, forgetting that, you know, that life was burning down around me and causing me a lot of pain. Thankfully I got to the point where I just didn't know what to do anymore. I had some information that you guys had given me, but it wasn't keeping me sober. I wasn't using it. There were tools laid at my feet, but I wasn't picking them up. I had gotten drunk one more time. And at this point, it had become obvious to me. When I first got into the rooms, I thought, you know, if I ever put a little bit of effort into this, I could probably, you know, I could do this on my own. I could do this. And by this point, the compulsion was just so great, and the that mental obsession, you know, as soon as that first drink hit my lips. It was everything. It was all I could think about was the next drink. All I could think about is how am I going to hide this long enough to keep this going? How am I just going to keep this going? So I picked up a drink again, and I was in it, and I was with my father, and I had a moment of clarity, and I just said, listen, tomorrow morning I'm going to get up, and I'm going to convince you that I don't need help, because I've gotten really good at that. But I need you, no matter what, to take me to rehab tomorrow. And I'm grateful that I was able to do that. I'm grateful that I got help to do that and to walk in those rooms. The sponsor I was working with at the time, let me know that eventually that's what he had to do. And once he got, there, things started changing for him. I went in there, really defeated, but when I got there, I found that I knew I really wanted this. I didn't know if I could do it. I really didn't think I could. I thought there was something completely wrong with me. And when I got here, I thought that, you know, I wasn't like anyone here. And then it got to a point where I just thought maybe I'm the stupid one. Maybe, you know, I can't figure this out for anything. And I got out of rehab. Wow, it's a lot later than I thought. What I wanted to kind of focus on, the hope of this, I've been thinking about this as Tim asked me to speak with you tonight. There are some key moments, and I know when I got out of rehab, they asked me to do some outpatient therapy with a group of other people. And I was excited to be trying something new, just anything to help me stop drinking in between meetings. I went there, and my sponsor, who I found, and the man who eventually helped walk next to me shoulder to shoulder through the steps, it said, you know, you really like talking. Maybe when you go to group therapy, maybe you just listen and see if there's someone there that you can be of service to, maybe someone you can help. I thought, I don't know what you mean, and obviously I'm the one who needs help. I'm the one going to therapy, totally forgetting that there are other people in the room in this group therapy. And at that very first meeting, there was another guy sitting across from me, scared just like I was to be in there. Jim happened to be blind and had never been to an AA meeting, but I had. I told Jim afterwards, you know, if you want to go to a meeting, you can. I'll take you there. And we spent the next or that whole summer just going to meetings together, picking them up and driving him. And, you know, a lot of times there was a lot of two alcoholics fighting and cursing each other out and everything else, but we both stayed sober. You know, we went to meetings, we found sponsors, Jim calls me today, sometimes struggling, but I know I can be there for him if he needs me to be. I can pick up the phone at least. I can't get Jim sober, but I know that summer something changed for me. I know that just showing up for service, not even knowing what service was, but showing up, changed something for me. And suddenly I didn't have to think about the next drink so much. Suddenly I didn't have to be stuck in my own head with the thoughts all the time. I had to go pick up Jim. I had to get to a meeting. So that one really stood out to me or something. You know, at the time, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't think I was doing anything else, but it was suggested to me that maybe I look for something like that, and I was able to follow a suggestion. I was able to show up for someone else, and those things, looking back, changed my life. These small things changed my life. The other thing that I was thinking about is I lost that one apparently. Thought about it too hard probably. The thing that did stick out to me is, you know, I moved down to Atlanta because the woman that I met, who's never seen me take a drink, but knows who I am, who I've been able to open up to and share myself with, who accepted me. I, you know, never in a million years was I going to show myself to anyone, man, woman, otherwise, because if you saw who I was deep down at my core, you would run away. And you would leave me alone, just like they all. That was my belief, my fear, that was sitting at the center of me. And here I am sitting with someone 6 feet away who knows this story, but hearing it again, and I don't have to be afraid anymore, you know? I have you guys. I have a higher power in my life. As ill-defined, as little as I understand it, there's something there that I don't know. But I moved down here because she moved down here. And man, all the red flags of early sobriety started going off in my head. And how am I going to do this? And you know, one sponsor once told me, if I talk to a girl, I'm going to die. You know, all these things that really went off. But I shared that at meetings. I talked to my sponsor about it. I got advice and I did the things that were asked of me. And, you know, I come down to visit her and like I said, something put NABBA in my life. We stayed at a Airbnb, near here, and I had my first meeting in Atlanta at St. John the Divine. And I met, someone who regularly goes to the 7:30 a.m. meeting at NABBA. And he said, this is a great meeting, but you should really go there next time you're here. So I showed up, and I just, every time I came down, I went to that meeting. And it was funny, you know, that meeting looked so much like my home group in Michigan. There was, you know, someone who was just like Barb. There's someone who was just like Tim S. There was someone else. And I understood these people. They're great, you know. And the fact that it was a literature meeting, just like my home group was, and I could get into the literature, really meant something to me. And so for months, I'd come down here on the, you know, every 4 or 5 weekends, and I'd go to that meeting. And then there was someone there who was cooking breakfast on Saturday mornings. And, you know, I had left the restaurant industry because I could not work and not drink. I couldn't do it. And here was a place where I could finally go back and do something that I'd been passionate about for so long. And still do service. And it was there. Everything was laid out for me. All I had to do was show up. You know, that's the amazing thing that keeps being shown to me is that if I show up, beautiful things happen. You know, all the time. I get in my way often. I lose track of that very simple thought often. But I have a center. And that center is AA. That center is my home group. That center is a service that I found here that I never had in my life before. I had great ideas of what a great person I was. I had these great theories about how I'd really love to do volunteer work, but, you know, my life kind of gets in the way. And you told me, just do it. Put it into action. Do something. See what happens. You know, I just am eternally grateful for the person that you're helping me to become, the person I was always meant to be. I'm not there yet, you know, probably won't ever get there, but I get a little bit closer when I show up. I get a broader view of the world. You know, I love what my sponsor used to tell me, that all I get is this little keyhole. That's all I see the universe through. But then I come to a meeting, and you give me your keyhole, and you give me your keyhole. And then I get a little more of the mosaic. I see a little bit more. You constantly show me things that I never could have come up with on my own. And that's how we got sober. By doing that. And I really, truly appreciate that. My life is immeasurably better than it was before. I get to work with other men, and in that, they show me more of myself. I get more in, and I open myself up in ways that I didn't know were possible. I'm able to try to truly be part of someone's life. You know, whether that's the people in my family that I've long known the longest and held the deepest resentments towards, or just someone coming in for the first time, because that's what you did for me. So again, I am just thrilled that I get to be a part of this program with you, and that I was able to share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope with you tonight. So thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jonathan. I remember when you came to the 7:30. That was so nice.
I remember you being there when I got there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan.
It was a great, great, great story.
Yeah.
So it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Really wonderful.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Ernie.
Great message is right.
Jonathan, you're making a real positive difference in our lives, and I speak for everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you.